Thanks so much for being such a wonderful audience, and it's my pleasure to just close the session today. I just want to, you know, take a few minutes to bring all this thing together in terms of what the session was all about today, right? So we started with Praveen talking about, you know, giving you a perspective on CAPEX against OPEX and how cloud plays a big role in driving that decision, right? How cloud is central to that decision. We followed up with Mandira talking about how we do BI within Microsoft from a finance perspective. And we talked about Excel as a primary tool where you could have a user who is comfortable using that tool for so many years without any retraining, using that same tool to extract data from disparate sources and make meaningful insights into the data that you have. That followed with Mahesh coming in and talking about analytics, and Saket talking about risk. Now, what I want to do about, you know, in this next 5 minutes maybe, is to, you know, get down and sediment the discussion to a level where you would be having that discussion with your CIO on a day-to-day basis. Based on my experience and my discussion with various CFO and CIO, you know, these are some of the discussions that I want to bring onto the table, saying that when the discussion comes to your table, what are the right questions that you should be asking, right? Having learned whatever position is on the cloud and what cloud is all about. So I would first start with some from data point. This is a canned slide, you know, which is done by a survey, which says that, you know, 40% in 40% of the organization, nearly, the CIO organization reports into the CFO, right? And more than that, it talks about how CFO is now going to play a very central role in deciding the IT strategy. You're seeing this across the world, and that trend is also seeing in India. So I want to pause here and, you know, ask, show of hand, in this audience, how many of your CIOs report into you? Nobody? Two? Only two? Okay. Then I have a follow-up question. How many people in this room have a dual responsibility of both CFO as well as a CIO? One? Okay. Well, that's why you were asking all those intelligent IT questions, right? So I was wondering where those questions are coming from. So anyway, the point on this slide is, you know, is all about saying that CFOs more and more are acting like a bridge between the senior management, the CEO, and the IT function. And basically aligning IT to deliver business results, right? How to make IT more efficient. That's what they're talking about, and that's how the importance of CFO is growing in the organization. Now, when I come to a ground level discussion, I just want to get to the brass tacks discussion which a CIO would typically have with the CFO, based on my experience and, you know, based on what we see, based on my customer meeting with a customer. A CIO always wants money, right? And that's where they come to you, saying that we need dollars, there's some new projects that we want to do, and I just want to sediment this down to a number of projects which are actually very popular, right? You'll hear this, and when I show you this, I think the bells will start ringing. The first one is about virtualization project. How many of you have heard about your CIO coming to you saying, we want to do a virtualization project and for which we need money? Virtualization is nothing but, the few people here, virtualization is nothing but server consolidation. So in net, what your CIO is trying to tell you is that, you know, over the years, because of business reason, and they may be the right reason at that point in time, we have built these LOB apps, and each LOB app is resting on different servers, right? And those servers are spread out across our organization, maybe at different location. So in net, what we have done is we have created a server sprawl across the organization. So what I'm going to do is now embark on a virtualization project or server consolidation project to bring all the server and consolidate into a single place so that I can drive economy of scale and give us cost reduction in terms of money and also the ease of management of that. I think your question back to them should be about, cloud is the biggest virtualized environment out there, done by professional organizations like Microsoft, Amazon, Google, right? What is that you're going to do so different within our own data center, which you can't get outside from a public cloud? Now, let me call out here. There are some applications with merits to be run within the premises. I'm not saying that everything can go onto the cloud. But our data tells us that 60 to 70% of this workload has no business been run out of your own private data center, because that's not your business. Your business is not to run data center. It is to run your business, right? So I think the next drill down question there is, why are you doing this project? Which are the apps that are going to go on this serverless, you know, virtualized environment which you're trying to create? Virtualized environment is nothing but they're trying to create one big server infrastructure within an enclosure called data center, which will have a lot of, you know, access controls and a lot of other costs which will be associated with that. So I think take a pause there and ask these questions, right? Can these apps, have you done an assessment of all the apps that we have in the organization? How many of these apps can go to public cloud? Do you have, you know, reports from a, let's say, a consulting organization or from a, you know, an IT vendor in terms of doing a neutral assessment about which are the apps that you have, what can go onto public cloud and what can't go to public cloud, and what are the reasons for that? I think you'll save a lot of money in this bargain by asking these deal dog questions. When I move on, the next one is storage. And this is an all-time favorite. This is an all-time favorite. Every quarter, every organization needs more and more storage. There are companies who have built a business model on this storage, right? This appetite for storage. And this keeps on augmenting every quarter. You'll always go back and check that people are asking for more storage, more dollars to be pulled in. Now, we did a study. There's a partner that's here, and if you get a chance, you should talk to them. The company name is Bluefin Corporation. It's a US company. They've set up a subsidiary in India. Their business is only to do storage for company. They don't sell storage, but they do assessment of storage. So what they do is they get into your company and they will do an assessment of your entire data that is existing right from the day your company was incorporated and wherever it is lying. They have tools to go and, you know, sniff all those data, and they will actually grade the data for you. When I say grade the data, they will tell you that out of your 100% of your data, so much percentage of data has not been accessed for so much of time, so much of data has been accessed for so much of time, and so much of data has been accessed every day. So they create a tier for you, which is hot, warm, and cold data. You will be surprised. We did this across 10 organizations in India. All 10 organizations, we found 70% of the data is cold data, which has not been touched even once in the last 5 to 7 years. Not even once. Okay? 70% of the data. And those are lying on expensive boxes, storage boxes. They cost you a bomb. The question that you need to be asking is, how much of those cold data can we move to the cloud? Can we put an appliance like a StorSimple, which is a technology that Microsoft has, it's an appliance, where it starts tiering data, right, onto the cloud automatically based on the rules that you set within the organization. So you're in complete control. You set the rule, what kind of data can get tiered to the cloud. So I think worth asking that question about, why do you keep buying storage every quarter? How much of cold data exists in the organization? Why can't the cold data get onto cloud? Give me the reason why it can't go onto cloud, right? And as I said right in the beginning, some industry, there are some sensitive data, customer data, which a regulator may not allow you to put on the cloud. That's a different matter. But not every industry falls into that category, right? That's the second big thing, big button, disaster recovery. This is all about, how do I get protected? How do I build an insurance for myself, right? I've set up my whole data center now. Now I've got, my organization has grown. I started with some 100 applications. Now some 200 applications are resting in this. Now I really need to go and think about my data disaster recovery strategy. So what do? When you need to have an effective disaster recovery, you need a replicable server set, number one. If your disaster has to be really, really effective, you need a different location for that server to exist, right? And you need more people, you need more training, then you are creating a replicable infrastructure, maybe possibly in a different city. The question that you should be asking is, why should we do this? Why can't I create my DR on the cloud? And mind you, that DR from day one is replicable across 4 to 5 data centers across the world. So you get DR by default on cloud, right? At a fraction of a cost. So I think that's the question you should be asking. You know, why are you building this DR infrastructure? What is so special about it, right? Why can't it be on the cloud, right? And Microsoft has an offering around what we call as automatic service recovery. That's a full DR solution which can take your data center, replicate onto the cloud. And you are in control of that data at every point in time. You don't lose any control of that data. You're a system administrator, that's what I meant. So that's the second, you know, third big piece. We talked about BI, and I touched upon it. You know, 70% of this project fails because of the user experience. You're giving a different tool to a user to start doing BI. And he's resisting around it, saying that I don't want to do this. I don't want to relearn this whole thing new, right? Why can't I stay in my familiar tools like Excel and do this BI? And that's what Mandira demonstrated in the morning, and I take all the feedback that came up, right? It may not be a cookie cutter solution, but I can tell you that 50% of the need, even if it's met by using Excel as is, without deploying new tools, your user acceptance will be much, much higher in the organization. And that's what you're finally looking for, right? So that's the fourth one. Fifth one, UAT test environment. How many people here have a SAP or a PeopleSoft or a Dynamics ERP implementation in the organization? Literally all of them, right? And you will hear this from your CIO that I have to have a UAT setup which is matching in capability to my production setup. You don't have a choice. Because if you're running a production on, let's say, a 42-core machine, you also need to test it on a 42-core machine, right? So they will actually end up building a replicable same duplicate infrastructure, which is costing equal amount of money. The point that I'm driving here is all of this, including SAP today and Oracle, is certified on Azure today. The only public cloud which is certified for SAP and Azure, by the way, only public cloud. You could take your whole testing infrastructure onto Azure from day one, the day you embark on the ERP project, right? So we're getting two kind of customers right now, people who are doing greenfield projects on ERP, and the second batch of customers who have already have ERP like SAP, and they have a test environment running for the last 4 to 5 years, and they're about to retire their hardware, and they're thinking about, should I buy new hardware for the UAT setup? And they are moving away from that decision, saying, I will not buy this, and I'll do it on Azure. Right? So that's the other point. And then finally, right, that's the last point I want to leave you with, right? Innovation. And this is public data, right? If you go to any CIO's budget and start drilling down, you will realize that 70 to 80% of his budget is spent on keeping the lights on. When I say keeping the lights on, it is about maintaining the existing hardware that is deployed, retraining his people, right? AMC contracts for the hardware, all of those, compromise 70 to 80. So what does he get for doing some new stuff, launching new product or new services, or thinking out of the box is 20% of your budget, right? And I think that's a gross injustice to your own organization in the way that IT is run. And world over, people are thinking, and CFOs are thinking about, how do I change that mix, right, over time? It's to 20 today, can I get to 50-50 balance? Right, you can't drop maintenance out completely, but can I get 50 to 50 in balance? That's where cloud plays a big role. And this is real data, right? When you look at average engine investment between 2002 and 2010, that has reduced from $528 to $325 million. When you look at this 38% drop, that is primarily driven by cloud. So the beautiful thing about cloud is that when you talk about innovation, right, innovation does not come without failures. I hope all of you agree. Right, every innovation that you embark on will come with number of failures, and you need to budget for that. But when you try to do those failures on-premise, it's very, very expensive. Cloud gives you that, unshackles you out of that, removes that barrier, and reduces the cost of failure to a finite amount, which you can deal with as a business as usual within your own budget. So it helps you to fall and get up very quickly and try a new idea. Right? That's what you're talking about, enabling more experimentation. The cost has come down, but the number of angel-funded companies have gone up drastically, like 72% more. This is all driven 100% by cloud. You couldn't have thought about this model maybe four, five years back, when we didn't have the public utility companies out there. And finally, I think I picked up this from Praveen's slide. As a CFO, remember, right, the usage that you do, the customers who use it because they paid for it. This is a typical on-premise purchase that is made. Once you have made it, made a decision, you will make CIO's life miserable. He'll make his time, people's life miserable to show productive usage of that asset. Even though really it's not getting productively used. But the cloud models again unshackles you, right? You actually pay for what you use. You only pay, and if you stop using it, you just discard it, and from the next month onwards, then you go on with your life, right? So just final thought on this. So that's it from my end. Thanks so much. I hope this session was useful for you folks, and I'll be more than happy to take more questions here. Yep.
related to the technology, but as we are moving from CapEx to OpEx model, in terms of all these things, the actually auditing standards are not accounting for it, because when you had gone for the CapEx model, it was getting into depreciation. Now, though the investment in the form of cloud is when you talk about is being treated as a service, it's an infrastructure related kind of investment. But now, rather than going into depreciation amortization, it comes to directly the expenses. So in terms of company, which are earlier were evaluated on EBITDA, now suddenly their expense goes because some of the below the line components now come about.
Yeah, yeah.
And that is where the auditing is not basically, auditors are still strict and they say no, this is to be treated as an expenditure and this can't be treated as the infrastructure related expenditure. Mm. They don't even allow to amortize it. So this is where the change has not happened, where a large change has happened in terms of the technology and the way businesses now make use of technology, but the financial accounting and auditing standards are not taking a note of it.
Yeah, I think that's a great point, and maybe Saket can add some.
Yeah, I agree with you. And you're right in saying so that yes, this is the biggest challenge which most of the organization, I mean CFOs and the finance directors, do face in terms of arguing with the auditors with respect to the treatment of this as an expenditure item.
How about the security? Since we talked that that's a separate point, but since the data is on the public servers, all the organization can ensure that data is secure.
So I don't know whether you got a chance to attend our chairman session or our CTO session before this session. I don't think you folks have, right? So this got addressed there. So we are talking about, when you talk about Azure as a platform, right? We are, you know, ensuring that every certification, security certification in a particular geo, we are certified on. Whether you talk about HIPAA, whether you talk about ISO 2007A, all of those which are mandatory required, we are actually complying on each of those certifications. That's one. Second, we are open for third-party audits, right? So I'm saying, as in more certification standards are coming up and more certification, our you know, endeavor is that we go and certify 100% of those, right? So that's the point we are trying to make, right? And from a privacy point of view, which is a, you know, other element, other side of the security, we are the only company, public limited company, which in the contract will write to you saying that how we are going to use your data or not going to use your data. And that's one. Second, where is your data going to lie?
Right? Like some of our competitor who would use your data to get insight into the, you know, how do they reach out for advertising certain products, we will never do it. And we'll give it to you in writing. Right? So that should give you a lot of confidence, both on from a security point of view and also from a privacy point of view, which I think it's getting more important as we go on in terms of how people or we are, you know, OEMs like Microsoft or Google or Amazon is using company data and also individual consumer data, right, with or without their permission. So that's embedded as part of the contract.
Just quickly, I don't think that it's really simple, but I would rather have a question of security. We work with all companies which had their data in the US, which have the
HIPAA compliance.
Again, like I said, security is always a concern that you start with, but when you drill down and start going to each of the items in terms of how you knock it off or how you work with Azure in terms of getting it certified, there's a very clear process to actually plan. Okay. Other than in some really great cases, most cases, you can actually work through a whole security model and you can come back to the developers properly certified for most security.
There's a very interesting service, you know, which we have launched. I think we're going to launch it in India in the next week or so. You'll see an announcement of that. We are doing that with Tata Communication, where that's a vendor that you'll have most of your MPLS network, you know, you would be having in your organization, with we have bought bandwidth from them. So we are actually launching a service called as Express Route, which is nothing but a direct connection, a direct pipe from your data center to the Azure data center. Right? Now that solves two problems for you. One is obviously the latency, the speed at which you access data on the public cloud, and second is security to a large extent, because you're not coming from an internet onto the, you know, Azure data center. You're going from a direct pipe which is connected, you know, it's like a, it's like, you know, just when you picture it, just picture it like a dedicated pipe within running from your organization data center directly onto the Azure data center. That's called Express Route. It's getting launched maybe in the next 7 to 10 days in India.
Okay, thanks so much for being such a wonderful audience. I think it was the design of this room which didn't allow you to get out of here.
Thank you so much. One request, have feedback forms with you. If you could fill those, it would help us getting in touch with you and also improvising on the content that you saw here for future sessions. And after that, we would request you to join for lunch. In Algorithm restaurant, which is when you go out, right on the left hand side near the stairs, you go straight, there's lunch there. So please join us for lunch. Thank you.
Thank you.
Anybody who doesn't have the feedback form, I can just give it right away.
Should just leave it here?
Yes, you can leave it here.